Do what you like.
Don't serious, speak.
Man. You cannot be serious.
Well, it's New Year's Eve, Donald.
Now, haven't you got anything else in your life to do besides podcasts? Like, it's... I could have been home enjoying myself, and I've got to come up here to Port Melbourne.
Oh, yeah, you at home enjoying yourself. What would you be enjoying yourself doing?
Well, I would
cutting down trees.
Oh, who was this?
Now, what instructions did I give you before we started? I said, don't speak until I introduce you, and we will speak for a couple of minutes, and then I'll introduce you. And what happened?
Politically correct.
Politically, whatever that means. Now, Don, you. So it's New Year's Eve. It's the morning of the day before the new year, and normally Mick Sheehan is here, but he is still away on a safari with...
He's having coffee. He's drinking Don, coffee in Sorrento Don, and Portsea.
Don, please. He's away still with Bill Ferg. They're up the Amazon. They've gone deep sea river fishing for carp. And Bill's going to bring a whole lot of carp back with Mick and sell and serve it at the lobster
cave. Well, Mick will be working overtime because Bill's only got the one... What? No, he's got a prosthetic leg now, hasn't he? But one arm.
He's just a shell of a man. And you might think that carp is not a great fish to eat. The way Bill prepares it, it is a delicacy.
Carp?
Carp!
They're ruining our waterways, carp, an introduced species.
This is right. Amazon carp.
What? Piranha?
This is... Piranha.
Piranha? Yeah.
Well, that's what we're fearful, that one of the piranha might eat the other of Bill's legs off.
No, it's plastic. He'd be right.
Of his legs off.
Oh, the good leg.
They are voracious eaters. Anyhow, we prattle on, Don. So that's where Mick is. So he should be back with Bill
I saw him having coffee at Sorrento before he left to go to the Amazon then.
Yeah, that's correct. That's quite correct.
Unshaven?
Yeah.
He looked like he just got out of bed and it was lunchtime.
He looked like a hobo.
Exactly. That look they have down
with
there.
With
a B. The Portsea Sorrento hobo look. It's
hobo.
It's a cultivated look.
Never confuse those two words.
Why do the women down there, another interesting observation, why do they wear black tights, black top and black shoes? Is that the fashion now?
Slimming. Yep.
Every one of them has wearing the same outfit.
Because that black. Makes them look slimmer.
Well, there's no imagination.
Now, Don, so I just now have to move on to... there's a person we've asked to come in today who has a... If you are talking in the terms of being an artist, he has the broadest canvas of work that probably any Australian's ever had. I'm not sure if he's succeeded at any of it, but we're going to ask him. He has been in finance, in marketing, in sport. He's been in politics. He has been a global performer as far as...
an entrepreneur?
Everything as far as food and beverage goes. And he has very graciously given up his New Year's Eve morning to come in and speak to us. It's no good going through everything he's done. But
well, I'm interested.
Suffice to say, he is still John Dorman Elliott.
And I am very interested in one aspect of his life, which you didn't cover.
Well, hang on. How about you say welcome, John?
Oh, well, he interrupted before, so I thought...
No, well, he was listening to me, so he didn't interrupt again. So he's going beautifully. So welcome, Jack, and thanks for coming in.
Good on you, Sam.
He looks very smart in his reefer jacket, navy blue reefer jacket, and contrasting
pants. This is an audio thing, Don. It's not a visual
thing.
Well,
I'm explaining to people that he looks very smart.
The first thing I want to ask you, Jack, is did you, like, it's a bit like Humphrey Bogart said, play it again, Sam. He actually never said play it again, Sam. He said, you played it for her, now play it for me, play it. That's what he said, Humphrey Bogart. Did you ever say pig's ass?
Never.
You've never said pig's ass. You never said that. No. Isn't that apocryphal how that becomes into the folklore of...
Well, it was that lunatic on the television.
Rubbery figures.
Yeah, he started...
Now, there's
you should be complimented having a puppet made of you. Not many people do that. That's when you've really made it.
Is that right?
Well, it is.
Is that a puppet made of you?
No, I haven't.
And isn't that the sign of the times where that is now politically incorrect to take the piss out of politicians and people like you? And
I don't think that's true. I still take the piss out of them.
No, Jack, but... On a public broadcaster or on a commercial broadcaster, you cannot poke fun at people now because they're very sensitive. And in this new age world we live in,
that's all nonsense.
We think it's all nonsense, but the new generation, the Zen and Zip, what are they called? Zen and G, what do you call that? Zen and Y and Z generation? What do you call that?
Yin and Yang.
Something like that. There's a new generation coming up who you're safe space and you can't crowd people and you've got to be tolerant and inclusive and all that.
Well, I didn't come on to listen to this horse shit.
No, I can't.
Thank you, Jack.
Now, I want to start.
Thank you, Jack.
I've done no preparation, John, but one thing that...
What's new?
What will you shut up? One thing that intrigues me is amateur football.
Yep.
Now... You played for Old Carey.
250 games.
I realise that. And how many years?
Well, I was working for McKinsey, who are worldwide consultants. So I captained the team for 5 years.
That's 61. You won the best and fairest in your, 1961?
Yeah.
Won a premiership in the same year?
Yeah, we did. And we won 28 games straight.
Now, that was under a Hawthorn, former Hawthorn player who got you
Speaking
blokes...
Speaking of the microphone, Jack, please.
Noel Voigt.
Who got you blokes fit before that it was a social club.
Exactly. That's exactly right. We were useless.
And you were what? A ruck rover, half forward?
I started off in half forward, but Noel Voigt put me onto the ball. So I played as a ruck rover all my career. So I was in and under.
I understand.
Knocking a few about.
I understand that because you were one of the three that had short sleeve Guernseys. The rest of them had long sleeves, so you must have been a bit of a tough.
God, you've done some homework.
Oh, I know,
you?
Johnny.
Even the wettest day, I'd have a short sleeve Guernsey on. Yep. I didn't have a long sleeve one.
Hang on, I haven't finished yet.
Oh.
You were made captain, in 1962? 62 after winning the best and fairest. So, how long were you captain for?
3, 4, 5, and 6.
And your brother Richard started at Hawthorn, or tried out at Hawthorn with me when I first went down there. He was a very good centre player for Carey.
Yeah, very good player. I had two brothers, three of us that played with old Carey together. He was the best footballer.
He played in the centre. And I think he made the all-star team, didn't he?
He made the interstate team. Yeah. The amateurs.
In case no one's
about
ever...
3 or 4 years he did that. He was a very good player. Mm.
So seeing we've jumped into football right off the bat, Don, in case no one's ever heard...
Well, this gives another aspect to this
In case
man.
No one's ever heard of his brother Dick or Carey Public School or Noel Voigt, let's get on to the thing he's really...
You haven't heard of those. Anything that doesn't interest you, you know nothing about doesn't interest you.
I'm surprised at his knowledge. It's very good.
Oh, you wait. He'll have some questions from left field you won't believe. Now, you wait till he gets onto the train going up to Warrnambool. Now, Don, I know I am interested. I'm trying to take the place of the listener. Who will wonder?
Who will
be sitting on the beach thinking, "Who the fuck is Noel Voigt?" I shouldn't have said.
Well, it was full forward for Hawthorn.
And he played 80 games in the '50s, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
You're more renowned, Jack, of being the president of Carlton for 20
years. Yeah, 19 seasons, 20 years. We made the finals in 13 of those 19 seasons. We played in 5 grand finals and won 2 premierships.
I knew all that, but thanks for...
Just tell you, since then they've done nothing.
This is my point of asking you this. You knifed Ian Rice to take the presidency.
No, he had to leave the country of his own volition. He'd done something...
untoward.
Yeah, I don't know what it was exactly. No. Yes, but he left.
You know, you got a smile on your face. Yeah. You know exactly what he did.
What did he do, Jack? Come on, it's public knowledge.
Yeah, I think he knocked some money off, didn't he?
He's a felon, was he? Was he convicted?
I don't know. But
you know
they
everything.
They rang me. Wes Lofts rang me and Ian Collins and said, Rice, he's gone overseas. He's left the Carlton Football Club. Would you come in and be president?
And you said, would I ever? And then that's amazing because how ironic that 20 years later, Ian Collins knifed you and took over the presidency.
He's a shocker.
He's a shocker. You're not talking
about. Well, he took Carlton away from Princes Park. That was disgraceful.
But he had a sweetheart deal at the
down at
Docklands, didn't he?
Yeah, Docklands. Yeah.
Conflict of interest, you reckon?
I reckon, totally.
Now, Jack, I know you've given those credentials about Carlton not being successful since you left. Perhaps they're not successful because of your presidency, because, now just wait for this, you got into a legal wrangle with the AFL because you were under the investigation for salary cap infringements and they fined Carlton $1 million and lost them some draft picks and they've never recovered. Is that fair comment or is that nonsense?
Well, it wasn't my doing.
Well, cool. What
you was it Stephen O'Reilly's doing by self-reporting?
But the buck stops at the top, doesn't it?
Yes, I agree.
Well, is that fair to say that, Jack? That the National Crime Authority investigate.
That was a different thing.
That was about another
that
business.
That was Bob Hawke.
Yes, that was another business you were involved in, not about you.
I was federal president of the Liberal Party and they went after me.
No good reason. You said
and
it was
a vendetta.
The
court case went for 8 months and the judge let us off totally.
I wasn't accusing you. That you said it was a vendetta. That, but we'll just get on to that in a minute. But Carlton have never been successful since you left. Is it because you are not there or is it because you were there?
Oh, other people have to make that decision.
Well, I'm asking you, looking back, are you really...
Well, I think we would have done a lot better if I'd still been there than we did have done.
I see. And why aren't you there? Why did Ian Collins take you...
Well, actually, we won that my last year. We won the Wooden Spoon for the first time.
And I
had 17 players out injured.
You did?
Let alone
the side.
Well, the side had 17 players out. They were all standing on the walls watching the last game we played against Richmond, and we actually got up and beat them, which was surprising. But we won the Wooden Spoon, and Carlton never won the Wooden Spoon before, so they decided to sack me.
So they sacked you, and did you go...
Well, we had an election, and we got beaten.
And did you go willingly, or did...
No, we had an election. Yes, we got beaten.
And did you throw the toys out of the cot? Or did you just leave
graciously?
Did you?
Yeah. I did tell Ian Collins that he still owes money to Bradley and Silvardi.
But what, you were paying them underhanded?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, you were.
but that was the inference that you Carlton, under your stewardship, had rorted the salary cap.
We didn't believe in the salary cap.
No, that's right, and you decided...
In fact, the year before the salary cap started, I got Kernahan, Bradley, Motley, Naley, a couple from Western Australia, all to Carlton. In 86, we played off in the grand final, and we won it in 87.
So you would probably say you were bigger than the competition.
We were smarter.
You were bulletproof, you were, weren't you?
Yeah, we were.
You were... So you weren't bigger.
There were a lot of dumb clucks running some of those clubs in those days.
I see. So you thought you were superior to them?
No, not superior, but...
Well, that's the...
I was running a big business. I knew how to run a football club.
So the businesses that you ran, Jack, there's hundreds of them. If you just... You were involved in...
You left the major one out when you introduced me.
I didn't introduce you in saying... I said there's
you left,
so...
You left Carlton and United Breweries out.
Jack, I didn't introduce you by giving you a rundown of all the things you're involved in. I said there's a whole raft of things on this landscape.
You left the most important one out.
I've got them here, but I didn't mention any of them.
You shouldn't have written them down in your book.
BHP, IXL, Elders, Foster's, Courage, all. I know exactly.
That was the biggest takeover in the UK at that point in time. It's £1.2 billion.
That's right, and you were trying to fosterise the world.
We did.
You did?
Yeah.
So where did it all go wrong? Did it go wrong?
The business didn't go wrong. I made one very bad mistake. I decided to bid for Elders, and that was a stupid thing to do.
Because you wanted to thwart Holmes Accord?
No, that was BHP, wasn't it?
We saved BHP from Holmes Accord.
Why did you want to save BHP from Holmes Accord?
Because we wanted BHP to invest in Elders, which they did. They put $1 billion into preference capital so that we would get the approval of the Monopolies Commission in England to be able to buy, as it turned out, Courage, which we did.
So that is when, I'm not mistaken, that is when the National Crime Authority said that you were in violation of foreign exchange regulations, wasn't it?
No, it's nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it at all. You don't get your facts right, Sam.
Well, I'm asking you about them, and I'm not saying you were accused. I'm saying the company was, wasn't it?
It was accused, yeah, because.
Come on.
I'm trying to remember. It's a long time ago, but when we were buying BHP shares,
yes,
we got Dick Pratt to buy a few.
Yes.
A guy in New Zealand to buy a few.
And that's all legal?
Well, yeah, but I don't think the New Zealand fellow did it legally, did he?
Well, he didn't. They weren't technically related to us at all.
Mm.
I'm certain they wouldn't have done it had we not suggested it and we financed it.
Jack, what...
Wait a minute. At the end of the story is Ken Jarrett, who was my finance director...
Yes.
We finished up selling all those shares. We had to pay some extra money both to Dick Pratt and to New Zealand, the New Zealander whose name escapes me. And Jarrett decided to do it on his own without telling us anything. And he botched it all up. And that's when Hawke and Keating went after us.
Jarrett went to jail on top of that, didn't he?
He went to jail for 6 months.
Yes. Microphone, Jack, please. Speaking.
He went to 6 months. Yeah.
Pretend you're on with your son on 3AW. Tom.
Well, I don't get harassed like I do.
I'm not harassing you. Jack.
He's very polite when I'm on the radio with him.
Jack, I'm on your side. But you.
No, you're not. You're on the other side of the table.
You just said that I should get my facts right. In fact, my facts are exactly right when I said about... You said that there was a vendetta against you from the National Crime Authority.
From Hawke and Keating. I was federal president of the Liberal Party.
The National Crime Authority is a government body, national.
Excuse me.
It's not. It's not?
It was politically motivated.
Hence the fact you said it was a vendetta.
I didn't say it was a vendetta.
Yes,
did
you did.
I don't know. Yes, you didn't call it a vendetta.
Now, I'm not having a go at you, Jack. I'm delighted you're here. But people are interested in this because you have been a global player in a whole lot of different areas. And people are fascinated by this man who lives out in Carlton. Are you tracking square with anyone? Do you live out there? Who do you live out there with?
My partner, Joanne.
Joanne? Yeah, yeah. I see. Very nice.
And I walk up Lygon Street in Carlton, which is two streets from where I live.
And you're praised.
Well, everybody loves me because I'm a Carlton man because they all bang for Carlton.
We
Lygon
love you.
Street.
Don, we had a man, your ex-wife. Don was absolutely smitten by your ex-wife, Amanda.
She's a very capable woman.
Don was taken with... I think that's not speaking out of school, is it, Don, that you were very taken with Amanda?
She's a star. She's very good.
Speaks highly of you too.
She does, actually.
She does?
I know.
It took 15 years
to get over the fact that I left her.
And you sold the house
under her.
I did. They're telling her.
Looking back, she said that. She did actually speak highly of you. Looking back, Jack, that's an extraordinary thing to do, isn't it? Just sell the house.
I couldn't do it. I could not have sold it, and for two reasons. One, I owned 100% of it, so I could do what I liked.
No, but that's ethically.
But she wasn't a part owner.
No.
So I tell every man who gets married, never let your wife own part of your house.
They're still entitled to 80% of what you've got.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, she got that, but she doesn't control what you do with the house.
No, but it would have been reasonable to say, Amanda, no, it's Jack would, here, your husband.
She wouldn't have tolerated the fact I was going to sell it.
That's
and
my
the
point,
funny
Jack.
Thing was that I'd sold it, and about 6 weeks later, it went through the change in ownership government authority. And of course,
Titles office.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, well done.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, pleasure. About time you contributed. So I went through the titles office, and of course, somebody spotted it and rang the press. They got paid $100 for letting the press know.
Yeah.
And at 8 o'clock in the morning, about 100 people stood outside my house. Every press man I've ever come across, or many I hadn't. To talk to me about the fact I'd sold the house. And the problem was that Amanda was just going out for a walk with the dogs. So she went out and they tackled her. I thought, oh, God. So
you'd have to expect that, Jack. It's an unusual thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the best part about it was I knew she'd be away about half an hour walking the dogs. I was in the office by the time she got back.
So when she got home with the dogs and found the locks were changed and she couldn't get in, where did she...
No, she could get in. She was still there.
So you'd let her stay on till the settlement was done.
Exactly.
And then that was it.
That was it. I bought her another house.
Of course.
And then I told her I wasn't going to move in with her. I didn't.
And so it wasn't acrimonious, the split, but it was just a convivial.
She wasn't too pleased about it at the time.
No, well you wouldn't be, Jack. I wouldn't. No. Reckon. I've had a couple.
Not when somebody like me leaves them.
I've had a.
Why? Someone like you? Why? What's so special about you?
Well, he's a human dynamo.
I had affluence.
Affluence and influence, and yeah, a human dynamo for about a minute, they tell me.
Yeah, that'd be right.
So I've had three goes at being married. I don't think I've ever sold a house under... I owned them all. Don't think I've ever sold a house under any of the three wonderful people I've been married to. Don't think I ever did that, Jack. I don't think I would have escaped with my life.
Well, I tell you what, it was a courageous thing I did.
Now, Jack,
why don't you let Scotty talk?
Well, I'd like to ask him a question about his... How's your health? Because
good.
It is, because you were found, 18 hours unconscious on the floor? What caused that?
I fell over and hit my one of my French carpets. Iranian carpet, you know, Iran. You know,
yeah, Middle Eastern.
What, they're hard, are they? They're not soft. What are you talking about?
Well, it's a carpet on
they're
top
They're expensive.
Of the carpet.
Okay.
I tripped on it.
Oh, I see.
Banged my head.
Yep.
I tried to get into bed, but I went unconscious. And I had a blood...
Aneurysm?
Brain? Bleed
on the brain.
That's it. Yeah, well done.
Yep.
And have you been drinking?
I might have, yeah. I think I'd had a few whiskies.
You like to drink on a hot day only, Jack.
Anyway, hang on. Look, we're not getting into his drinking.
The answer is that my partner rings me every morning if she's away. She flies for Qantas still. And she rang and got no answer. So she sent her mother, who lived 5 kilometres away, who was 90, round to visit her. She had a key to the apartment.
Well, how would she go picking you up off the floor?
Well, she didn't. Called the ambulance and they took me to the Epworth and they operated on me and I woke up 36 hours later and they drained, they'd actually taken my skull off the top and drained all my brain. Anyway, my surgeon, 9 months later, said, I can't believe the recovery you've made. Nobody else ever made a recovery like this. I said to him, well, only the good die young, so I'll be all right.
You're indestructible.
That's right. I'm a bit older than you, and I'm certainly look
not
younger.
Not much older.
What did you say then, Jack?
I'm a bit older than you, but I certainly look younger.
Jack, please, you haven't been on the Bolivian booger sugar, have you? What are you talking about? Holy mackerel. Jack.
You look quite fit, actually, for an old man.
It's amazing what a few needles will do here and there, Jack.
Oh, you liked that, did you, Jack? Yeah. Thought that was humorous.
He's had a few facelifts. Yeah.
What about RoboCop over here? Well, at least we got him laughing.
Who's had the facelifts, him or me?
Him.
Oh, thanks.
No, not you.
Not you.
You can tell you haven't had one.
That's Don, you should maybe get a toupee or something, or get a hairpiece. Now, Jack, so you were at once, so you've this is...
I thought we were going to talk about football. You're talking about a load of nonsense in here.
No, I'm not. This is... I'm interested in this.
Well, we're not interested in what you're interested in.
Well, Jack, in order to experience and enjoy the highs, you've probably got to experience the lows, to put it in perspective.
We've done it all.
You've done it all. That's correct. You
would you do anything that's different, Jack?
One very bad error in business.
Okay, what's
I
that?
I bid for Elders when I shouldn't have.
Yep.
We already owned 20% of it, and it brought me undone. And that's when I had to retire from Elders and get out of the whole thing.
Okay, what about football? If you had your time again, what would you do differently in football?
Now, just before you do...
Asking the question, not you.
I'm just before we... That bankrupted you, didn't you, the Elders thing?
No,
it didn't.
No.
I'm sorry.
Okay, football. If you had your time again, what would you do differently?
Yes. No, I think football, we weren't bad. I had four very good ex-players on the board with me. Guys like Wes Lofts, fullback guy, what's his name?
Kevin Hall. Back flanker, back
well
pocket.
Well done.
Yeah, that was good. One of the Rovers, very good player.
Rod Ashman?
Oh, he came on, I sacked him.
He was a nice fellow, Rodney.
Why did you?
Well, I'll tell you why we sacked him. We're playing in the grand final, and Neil Danaher actually sent an email to Sheedy to talk about Justin Madden's ruck plays. They didn't go to Sheedy. They went to a Carlton supporter by mistake.
Oh, I see.
And he ran up to the club that night. It was Thursday night. There were 10,000 there to watch us all train. And gave it to Rod Ashman, who was coach of the reserves. Ashman put it in his pocket. Didn't look at it till Sunday morning. The Essendon Rover, you know his name, champion player. Oh, yes. He kicked 5 goals in the first quarter.
Buick?
Who was the Aboriginal guy who played?
Michael Long.
Yep.
Well, he was a wingman, but he wasn't a rover.
On baller, yep.
Well, he dominated the first quarter, and it was something like 6-1. We were beaten. And Ashman came in the next morning, on Sunday morning, when we were having a quiet Sunday morning after being beaten, and told us he had this bit of paper, which we all looked at. Had we known before the game, we should have, then Justin would have changed his ruck plays. Might have made a big difference to the grand final. That was 93.
93. So
you were still playing, weren't you?
93, I finished in 1980.
Oh, did you?
Should have been your ruck coach. I would have. I coached.
You never have anybody from Geelong.
Oh, well, I coached his brother, Simon Madden.
Did you?
And he was.
Well, he was a champion player.
Well, Justin was a good player, a champion as well.
Both very good players.
Simon Madden is probably the fourth or fifth best player ever to have played the game.
Oh, that's a big. No, that is a big one.
I'd say he was unbeaten in the ruck, and he's kicked 500 odd goal. He was as
I'd say Farmer and Nichols were better ruckmen.
Of course, John, I didn't say he was better than them. I said he'd be the next person after them, and he is right up there as far as the best ever.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And Justin, actually, Justin's mother, Justin and the two brothers, she used to come. We used to invite her to the president's lunch whenever Carlton played Eston. And I'd always get her up and ask her, now, who are you going to barrack for today? She said, oh, it's the only day I ever barrack for Carlton because I like to barrack for Justin ahead of Simon. So she's
How did you get Justin down to Carlton?
I've forgotten now. You know, they don't know. They had Ruckman coming out of their ears, I think.
Yeah, they did. They had a lot of big men at Essendon at the time. Did. You're right. And he was he was number two and not really getting a go at Essendon.
Exactly. He was playing in the reserves. Mm. So we didn't pay much for him. I know that.
Do you like the way the AFL... I know you were instrumental in setting up the present...
I was.
The present...
We were going to break away.
The present structure of the AFL, weren't you?
Yeah.
Why were you going to break away?
Because the...
Too parochial.
No, prior to that, it was representatives from each club that sat on the board.
Parochial. Yeah, that's right.
And the weakest clubs had a majority, and they used to outvote us every day.
Had them... Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
So we were getting done every time we went to a meeting.
So what, the four top clubs against the eight bottom clubs?
Yeah, it might have been 7 and 5. Yeah, we were getting done every time.
Mm.
And they were handing money out to the weak clubs. So I got a prospectus written and with a bit leading law firm in Melbourne. And I took them up to Sefton, which we owned, which we had our conferences at, up at Mount Macedon.
Sefton.
I got all the presidents up there. Now, the Geelong president was a funny bloke, but it started to get foggy that night. And he was a doctor or a dentist or something.
Kevin Trefoil?
Yeah, I think that was him.
Kevin Trefoil?
Yeah, that's him, yeah. So he left home before the meeting started. He left for home. He had to go back because he didn't want to get caught in the fog. I thought it was the funniest thing.
So that's democracy at work. You weren't happy with...
Well, we had the 12 clubs and we actually said, look, there's 6 of you that are going to be in our competition and we'll select 2 more.
Really?
We didn't say which 2 and we didn't know which 2 at the time.
That's fascism, Jack.
No, it wasn't. It's good old democracy.
You said you wouldn't take the vote. You were outvoted by people who weren't as strong as you.
Well, give me the 6 clubs that were...
We had Carlton, Essendon, Collingwood, Richmond.
Not Hawthorn, not Geelong.
No, we had Geelong Melbourne. In. We had Geelong in.
Yep. Geelong, that's 5.
Yeah.
Trying to remember. Melbourne? You'd have to have Melbourne, wouldn't
you'd have
you?
Probably have Melbourne. Probably well Melbourne. Done, Jack. You'd have to have Melbourne.
And my friend, Dr. Wilson, who was then president of Richmond, he went down to the Melbourne Cricket Club. Because Aylett at the time was trying to move the headquarters of the AFL out to Waverley and he was going to play grand finals out there. Mm-hmm. So we told him of our plans and that we'd want to sign up the MCG for the grand finals forevermore. And they were so delighted.
Who were delighted, the MCC or
MCC,
the
AFL? MCC, yeah, oh right. No. And we didn't even tell the AFL, or the NVFL as it was called.
That's right, Jack, because you were... You were just...
I was working on a takeover.
Of course you were, Jack. I'm telling you, you thought you were bigger than the actual competition.
No, we were.
No.
It's all the others. See, the Eston president was a fantastic support. Wingman Beitzel was his name.
No, not Beitzel. Greg Sewell?
Sewell.
He was a back pocket player, number 9.
Was he? Good player, yeah.
Don, this is extraordinary stuff coming from
you. No, well, see, it shows your lack of knowledge and intellect.
Yeah, well, I didn't know who was the president.
Keep going, Jack. We'll continue this.
I'll have to say, you're adding a lot to this debate.
It's not hard.
Because you know so much about it, which is the man asking most of the questions seems to know nothing.
Could I ask, could you put your president's hat on again? And I want to give you a hypothetical question. If you had...
Why do you want hypothetical questions? Well, why don't you ask real questions?
All right, here's a real question. If you were the president of Carlton and you had nominated someone for legend status at your club and the player you had nominated said, no, I don't want to be presented with legend status at a certain meeting, I wanted to be at a different meeting, would you say, that's fine, yes, we'll change all our procedures to accommodate you, or why don't you come to the meeting we tell you and then we'll give you a legendary status?
Yeah, we'd have the latter. We'd decide what meeting you'd come to.
That's correct.
And this is Don's got you talking.
This
about.
Is correct. Don's been offered legendary status by...
Well, I think he deserves it.
He does, Jack. But
that Kennett wouldn't know. Now, there's nothing about football.
No, maybe... But Don, someone will
that
throw...
That was a monkey.
Someone will throw your fish at you if you keep doing that. But you just said... that if you were the president, which Jeff Kennett is,
yeah.
He should decide.
No, I agree that the committee of the club should decide when they present things.
Well, they did. And Don said, no, I'm not coming to that. I'm going to go and be presented somewhere else. And they said, well, you're not. Mm. So surely...
So he hasn't got legendary status.
Not as yet. I'm sure he will eventually.
I agree. Sure.
Do you?
Mm. Yeah. Oh, he was a great player.
Well, so you think Kennett knows nothing?
I'm interested.
Nothing.
I'm sick of you asking questions. I'm interested, who do you think the best ruckman you played against was?
Now, this is one thing I don't like doing because the older I get, the more I think teams are more important than individuals. But
that.
I found every ruckman now – I'm not just sitting on the fence here, but I found – because I was a counter-puncher and I had to adapt my game. The man on the left here – was what?
I'm sorry to Jack asked me that off. I gave exactly the same answer as you. I said I couldn't differentiate between the people I played against. They were all tough. They were all number one ruckman, and on every Saturday, it is so hard to pick who was better on any one given year.
Now, Jack, I went down to Geelong one day. There were two blokes. You weren't playing Johnny. But you'll remember these two fellows, that they totaled up three games between them, two ruckmen. One was Yates. Do you remember Warwick Yates?
Yeah, I remember the name.
Yes,
Warwick Yates and Mance. And what was...
Jeff.
He came from Geelong West.
Yes, he did.
Now, between the two of them, John, they'd played three games. And I thought, I'm going to play Larry Doo here today. They took me apart. I never got a touch all day. From that point on, I never underestimated any player I played against.
That's interesting.
But
so
I found them
so
all...
So you still won't answer my question?
No, because it's very difficult.
Who would you say are the best three or four?
Well, I played against Farmer.
I
played against Farmer. Now, I beat Farmer in the first quarter out at Hawthorne. He changed his game completely, and I never got another look in for another three quarters. So he had a number of ways of going about beating players. Nichols used to jump early, but then at the end, when I was starting to rise and he was going down, he couldn't jump as well. So you could jump over the top of him. But he would come in from the side as well. I found it difficult. John used to come in from the side. I found it difficult against players that had come in from the side because they jump a fraction early.
Yeah. And I sat with Nichols at the AFL Life Members Christmas dinner, and he said the key to getting the hit out in a boundary throw-in was to jump early and be in
not
front.
At a boundary throwing or centre bounce.
No, he was talking about the boundary throwing.
Well, I disagree with that one.
No,
I'd put my body in front as the umpire was just about to throw it in. I would then make front position.
Yeah, he said you need a front position and jump early, both.
What did you do at Carey in the 250 games you played there, mate?
I was down in and under. I was never tapping.
Did you knock them out? Did you knock anyone out? Did you get reported at Carey?
Never got reported.
Never?
No.
That could be
someone. I used to run
Kerry
through
now,
a few,
you?
But I didn't ever smack them.
Now, did you play on that small... Johnny, just be quiet for a minute. Did you play on that small ground in Victoria Road, Auburn, or at Rathmines Road?
Both.
Well, they were very small grounds. They couldn't run away from you there.
Oh, I loved it. I had a guy who
He's, Jack, answer your phone for God's sake.
He was playing with old Campbell, and we're in the same grade as NFL when I was. And I met him 3 days before the game, and I said, I'm going to get you on Saturday.
Oh.
And he was absolutely petrified.
What, two private school boys talking like that?
Yeah, and what happened was we were at Rathmines Road, and there was a big paddock next door. I chased him towards the boundary. He ran another 50 yards.
Up the hill, up the hill.
Now, in this evolving world we live in, Jack.
It's not a surviving world. It's very
evolving.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Evolving.
Yeah, right.
You've answered that.
Oh, you're going to turn it off now.
No, you don't have to turn it off.
I'll turn it off.
Could have been someone important besides us.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you know how to turn it off?
No, but I've...
You've done practice. Something, do it.
So was women's football just starting when you were the president of Carlton? Was it just starting to get a foothold? Are we happy?
I think it's pathetic. Game's pathetic. Probably two or three of them can play a bit and the rest are useless.
So,
Jack, I'll tell you what they do well, they tackle hard.
They do. So, Jack, does it matter if they're pathetic or... They're enjoying playing our national game. You have no problem with that.
We played the first game of women's football at Carlton versus Collingwood at Princes Park.
Were you there?
I watched it on the television for one quarter and turned it off, and I've never watched another game since.
No, but Jack, of course you're comparing them to the great sides that Carlton had in the AFL and VFL. If here's me defending them. If there's a fledgling competition that's coming up, it's all right for them to... try and get better and play because they enjoy it, is it or not?
Yeah, I think, you could say that, but I wouldn't go along and watch it.
Their first
20 years' time, it might be quite good.
Yeah, their first game was a good game at the MCG. I think Footscray played Melbourne and the best players came together, and I thought that was a really good game. Mm. But you're right, the standard, they're really scratching around to make up the numbers now. They might have two or three good players and the rest are rants.
Yeah, exactly.
And the tackling, which you say, they can do nothing else but tackle because it's just a congested game.
Hang on.
Jeez, I tell you what, they hit each other hard. I have noticed that.
You haven't? It's because they're probably allowed to, whereas in the AFL you're not allowed to hit people hard because it'll be too much force for what you were trying to achieve in the first place.
It's your view.
Now, that is a view. If you tackle someone too hard in the AFL, you'll get penalised because it was unnecessary force.
Mm.
Now, so here's me. Well, I don't know why I'm defending. I am defending the women. If you say the standard...
You've always defended women.
Of course I have.
You've always been attracted to them.
That is correct, Jack. As is the three of us, we're probably heterosexuals, which is a good start.
I think we are.
Oh, that's probably a good start. So if,
better than being the opposite.
Well, not... Jack, please. Not better than being the opposite. This is our choice. So this is what's happening in the world. You have choices. Please don't start... Jack...
We don't want to get on to that.
If the women have just been a fledgling competition, of course they're not going to be that skilled at the start.
What are we talking about this for? I thought we were going to talk about something serious on this show.
Okay, well...
Now, I've asked him two questions. You've answered two and he's hijacked the other one. I said, if you had your time again, what about in the political field? If you had your time again, what would you do differently in the political field? Because you were state president, treasurer, secretary, whatever else of the Liberal Party. What would you have done differently?
Well, I actually said I would stand for Higgins.
Higgins is where? In what? Whereabouts? What area is Higgins?
Higgins is Toorak, right? Toorak.
That's not what?
Next door to
Keyong, right?
Yeah. And Higgins and Keyong were the two safest seats in Victoria. The guy who had the seat was a backbencher, and I found out 10 years later that they offered him board positions to resign.
The Liberal Party offered him board positions.
Although individuals in the Liberal Party, who I won't name.
Quid pro quo.
And worth about $500,000 a year, which is a lot more than he was getting as a politician. And for some reason he said no.
His name?
He died a few years ago.
So were they going to do, the Liberal Party, were they going to do a Bob Hawke, what the Labor Party did with Bob Hawke, straight
I,
in?
I had I'd had a majority of the Liberal Party members come to my office at Elders, and they all wanted me to go in and lead the party. But I had to get in on a by-election so that I could stand against Hawke. And, of course, it didn't come to pass because of this.
Okay, so how would you have combined, and what would have suffered, or what would have happened? You had a business going, the political side. Now, what would have what would you have done to...
Well, the board gave me 6 months to decide. But they were all lobbying, because I was chairman and chief executive. So we had people lobbying for the chairmanship of Elders, and I had people lobbying for my job. So I couldn't just sit there and say I'll wait another year, because I couldn't do that, because it was causing turmoil in the company. Well, not turmoil, but causing trouble. And
angst.
So angst, yeah. So after 6 months, I went to them and said, well, I'm not going in. And so I didn't.
Why didn't you want to go in?
Well, I couldn't go in. He wouldn't resign. He was the sitting member. I forget his name, but he was sitting
even
member.
Even though they offered him all these inducements, yes, he wouldn't resign.
He wouldn't accept them, no.
So you would.
I found that out 10 years later, I have to tell you. I didn't know at the time.
So would you, if you'd been the Prime Minister, would you have been Trump-esque, or would you have not?
Well, I think much of what John Howard did was found. I think he's the best Prime Minister
ever
in my lifetime. Yes. I didn't know anything about Menzies. He was a bit before me.
Yes. Pig Iron Bob.
Yeah, but my father would have regarded Menzies as the greatest.
Yes.
But I think Howard did a fantastic job.
Bob was late.
And I was federal president when I sacked Howard.
First time.
Yeah, put Peacock in. Peacock ran the 1990 election.
He was never the Prime Minister, though, was he?
No.
No.
But we won 9 seats in Victoria. I was going around the ballot boxes those days, the electorates.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, we're certain he's here, we're going to win this. We won 9 seats in Victoria and didn't win another seat anywhere in Australia. And we lost by 5. So Peacock resigned and... that other bloke we put in next.
Hewson?
Hewson, yeah. He's very good on the names.
He's extraordinary. He does a lot of research for all, particularly for you. I'm just...
He knows far more than you.
Now, listen, you were the... Getting back to this, you were the crux or the lifeblood of old Carey.
Oh,
you attracted a lot of support and enthusiasm.
I was captain of the football team.
And the social side.
I was also captain of the cricket team. We played in the senior turf in the eastern suburbs, which is played in 3 grand finals and didn't win any.
That's what they always did at Carey. They couldn't handle the pressure. You only
won. What happened was I was fielding it silly mid-on, and a fast bowler came in, he hit the ball, hit me on the knee.
It's silly middle.
Silly mid-on, silly position. And I dived and I just dropped it. I caught him at 5 to 6, the same bloke. He'd made 187.
Now, when did your personality change to a grumpy old man? Because you were the lifeblood of old Carey. And then there was a personality change.
Well, I've had no personality change. I just enjoy life.
And Jack, in order to enjoy life, would you say your drink of choice would be Grange?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It is because you...
And I took over the brewery. I sent the people out of the brewery. We had 500 pubs in Australia. I said, go and buy every case of Grange that we own.
My very point of
asking... And I paid the retail price for it.
My very point of asking you the question, you don't think I do any research, Jack? You had the biggest collection of Grange in the world at one stage.
I had 103 cases.
I rest my case. My case.
And that's taken me. I still got about 2 cases left.
Yes, yeah, so you've drunk 102 of them.
100
one of them.
Probably.
So you're still tipping?
Oh, I've given them away. And
you're still tippling? Still drinking?
Yeah, but I've given up the whiskey.
Oh.
What, after the fall?
Yeah, after the fall.
So you're a teetotaler now?
No, I drink gin and beer. And
anything else you can lay your hands on?
Yeah. I still drink a bit of red wine.
Of course you would, with 101 cases of Grange.
I've only got about 2 cases left.
Oh, sorry, you have 2. And you've just given up the fags?
Yep.
Good. So that how long ago?
After I had that fall, my brother, who's a leading doctor, He came in and he said, you know, the addiction to cigarettes only lasts 48 hours. You've been in intensive care here for 36. You've only got 12 hours to go. And after that, it's just the addiction's gone. It's
just a habit, after that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's the word I was looking for. And I said, right, I'll give it a go.
So do you feel better for it?
No,
different.
So you used to thumb your nose at all the smoking laws. You used to wander into the MCG and light up. And
I got thrown out of the MCG at a grand final day with 100,000 people there.
For smoking?
Yeah, in the ground.
Thrown out of the ground, not out of the room.
Inside the stadium.
Yeah, there are rooms.
I forget where it was.
No, you're not allowed to smoke in the actual complex. You've got to go outside.
No, that was what the rule had just become.
Yeah.
We said, stuff that.
Now, Jack,
so Dick Pratt came with me. We went back to his place and had a bottle of Grange and a couple of smokes.
Now, you've met some very, very important people who have captivated your imagination over the journey. Don and I are just two of them. But tell us, I believe you met one of our mutual people we admire, a singer and crooner over in the States. Tell us how you met that man, please. I am fascinated by that, because we saw him at Festival Hall 50 years ago.
Yeah. His name was Frank Sinatra, and we went to Mr. Chow's. We used to go to in London. My partner was actually Amanda.
Yeah, that's your wife.
Yeah, she was my wife.
Yep.
Still is. So we used to go to Mr. Chow's all the time. Anyway, this particular night, they sent us upstairs where only the lesser lights went. You know, all the important customers were on the ground floor. I wasn't too pleased.
No,
anyway,
that's right,
went upstairs. And about 5 minutes later, who walked in but Frank Sinatra, his fifth wife, whatever she was.
Barbara Marx.
Barbara, yeah. Several of his kids.
Yep.
And I said, I couldn't help myself. People did it to me and said, g'day, Frank. You know. He said, you're Australian. I said, yeah. So they went and sat down. His wife came over and said, why don't you come and join us for a drink?
Fantastic.
It was fantastic. So we sat there for 45 minutes and he said he loved Australia. The thing he hated was the press. Couldn't stand them, of which you two are members.
With what?
Anyway, we went back to our seat, which was about just next door. And it was just a wonderful experience. And he was so pleased to meet Australians. He loved Australia. And I found him a very easy person to talk to.
And did he know not of you necessarily, but did he know about Fosters? And
didn't know anything.
Didn't know anything. But he was personable and engaging.
And he was. And we were fascinated by meeting him. We weren't interested in pushing ourselves. So it was anyway, his wife came over after they left just before us, and wife came over and said, thank you very much for joining us for drinks. Frank really enjoyed it.
Really?
That was nice, wasn't it?
My word.
Now, Don, I don't know if you've got any more questions about Carey or...
No, I got one other. You were going to get on to famous people.
Yes.
I think... The number one person I've met in my career was the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Margaret Thatcher. She was an absolute star.
Was she?
And she was Prime Minister when I was President. She used to come to
President
Australia.
President of what? Of the Liberal Party.
Yeah, Federal President. Mm. So I met her here in Australia three or four times, but I got to know her husband, who was a very decent bloke. He actually resigned from a couple of boards when she became Prime Minister.
To support her,
that's right. And every time I went to London, which was once a month, I would have lunch with him. And so I actually asked him to become a consultant to our company, and she wouldn't allow it.
Quite rightly so.
I think that's correct.
No, quite rightly so. So
why he was keen to do it.
So why did you... Because there'd be tremendous opposition from the opposition who thought that she was...
Wasn't. I don't know why, but she wasn't going to allow it. She could see there'd be trouble.
No. Why did you think she was a great person?
Oh, she just... She I mean, committed. Britain was in diabolical
trouble. She took on the unions, didn't she, with regard to the coal mines.
Coal mines, yeah. Exactly right. She cleaned up, you know, the garbage people weren't collecting the rubbish when she got into power. She fixed everything up, and she was so determined. And what brought her downfall was that if people didn't agree with her, she'd tip them out of the cabinet. Towards the end, you know, she was there about 10 years, but towards the end, there were more that had been tipped out than there were left. So they knocked her off.
So this is like a Dorothy Dix question, but if you could be remembered for anything you've done, whether it be politically, in business or football, what would you hope people would remember you for? Not that you're not leaving us shortly, Jack. You're here for a long time. But what would you hope people would remember you for?
Oh, when I turn 100.
How long's that away?
I'm 78.
Yeah, so in 22 years, will you still have some Grange left? You couldn't sling a couple of bottles to Grange to Don and I, could you? We've never tasted it.
I've still got a dozen. One of the Carlton United blokes went down to a pub in Geelong, which we owned. And
pinched all the Grange.
He had a case of 1955 Grange.
Up Peter Burnett.
Was still in the cellophane pack. And he was so embarrassed selling it to me, he sold the case to me for $100.
Oh.
And what's it a now sells worth? $2,500.
A bottle.
Bottle.
Wasn't the late Peter Burnett, was it?
No. I don't know who it was. No. I didn't meet the publican.
So you took a case for $100 and you thought, you didn't say to him, hey, mate, that's a bit under the odds. Why not I give you a little bit more? You just said, no, thanks very much.
Yeah.
John, you were critical of Foster's after you left, of the way they were going, and your reason was their marketing strategy and also the content of alcohol in their beer. They were trying to reduce the alcohol content in the beer. Why were you critical of reducing the alcohol content in the beer?
Well, the taste of beer depends on the alcoholic content. And that's why Belgian beers and German beers are regarded very highly, because they're 7 and 8% alcohol. Now, we were always 4.9 for all our beers here, except for the low,
low carb.
It's Carlton Draft, Vic Bitter, Melbourne Bitter, all the major labels that we had were all 4.9. Now, they started to stuff around with it, and they reduced the alcoholic content from 4.9 to 4.6.
So they altered the taste of the beer.
There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And only when there was a change a couple of years ago, new management, They increased the VB back to 4.9. That's clearly the best product that CUB has. And see, Carlton Draft is still 4.6. So they reintroduced Foster's in this country at 4.0, which is one of the most stupid things I've ever seen.
But they're probably conforming to public opinion that we should have a look.
No, they're not. You never conformed to public opinion.
No.
I still listen to you, some
people. They're conforming to political correctness. Everything was low alcoholic.
That's right. So it was a major error. But the biggest error in their brewing after I left was they sold the whole of Courage, which we'd bought, off. Now, we paid $1.2 billion for Courage. Pounds.
How long ago?
Oh, it's a long time ago.
40 years.
Late '80s.
It's a hell of a lot of money.
Hell of a lot of money
in those days.
Yeah, and only because BHP put $1 billion into us. That's we saved them, and then they put money into us that we had the wherewithal to go and buy Courage. And we bought Courage, and it had 5,000 pubs, and CUB had 500. So we had pubs coming out of our ears.
Yeah, but their pubs were what, overseas in England?
All in England.
Yeah.
All in the UK. Scotland and the UK. And we were making hay there. And that allowed us to Fosterize the world, because we took Fosters into every one of those pubs. And it was a fantastic time for us, because we had Crocodile Dundee advertising our product.
Yeah.
He was absolutely brilliant. Yes. Absolutely brilliant.
Hoags. Yep.
And Hoags, he did it in the UK and the US for us. And everybody knew him and everybody therefore knew of Foster's.
Yep.
And you were sponsoring those games in London. Did you think they were a success?
What games?
Those games.
Oh, the AFL games.
Yes.
Yeah, well, we did that for the hell of it.
And the Grand Prix, you sponsored all around the world?
We did that. We did Formula that before One. We took Foster's overseas.
Yep.
So that we could see the Grand Prix are...
Huge.
Huge, around the world.
Yep.
And so putting Foster's as the major sponsor of the Grand Prix in Australia...
Whetted their appetite.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when we took Foster's around the world into the UK, we'd already taken Foster's right round Australia, so we had a national brand. And then Alan Bond came along with 4X, and he only had Queensland brand.
What do you think of Alan Bond?
I'm very pleased I didn't ever do business with him.
What about the others in that time?
Jack.
Well, Scase was a disaster. He was a crook.
They might say they're very happy they didn't do business with you.
They're both dead, so they can't say anything.
And Robert Holmes of Court, he was another one.
Oh, yeah. What a bad man.
So that was smart. Hey,
Holmes of Court was the worst person I ever met. I'll say it for one reason. You'd have a meeting with him. He had an apartment in that building next to the Windsor Hotel.
I know.
You know, up in about the 12th floor.
Yeah.
We'd go and start a meeting at, say, 2.30, 3 o'clock. We'd both have to leave about 5.30. He was going out for dinner or going to a show and I was doing something. There's always something on every night. And so we'll meet at 10 o'clock in the morning. When we met at 10 o'clock in the morning the next day, it was as though we hadn't met the day before. We'd sort of made a lot of progress and trying to resolve some things. And he'd start the next day as though we'd never met yesterday.
What, not a retentive memory?
No, he didn't want to. He wanted to start all over again.
He was disingenuous.
Yes, that's it. A lovely word.
Will there be another time in Australian business like there was in the 80s when you had we just mentioned four of them? Will it happen again?
Oh, well, it could. It has changed, I think. It's much more corporatised now. You know, boards are... I do not think the boards are doing much of a job. In my board at Elders, and we had the brewery and had the brewery overseas and all that stuff, the directors were contributing to the strategy of the company. I'd say now most directors sitting on boards, all they do is worry about their own backside to make sure they're following the laws of the land.
Boards.
They don't really contribute to the future of the business.
Now, you thought boards were an impediment to your desires and aspirations.
Well, they weren't. No, we used them. I used them. I had some wonderful directors. Bailey Myers is still alive. He's 95 years of age, and he was on my board from day one. And what a wonderful man. He's just an outstanding man.
Is that from the Meyer Company?
Yeah, Bales Meyer. He's 95. Bailey is his name. His mother was a Bailey.
Yep.
And she married his father who started Myers.
Yep.
And so they called him...
Bailey Meyer.
Bailey Meyer.
So, Jack, how do you reckon we've gone here today? You've impressed with Don and our knowledge?
No, I've been impressed with Don.
Why haven't you been impressed with me?
You ask too many questions and most of them are ridiculous.
They're not ridiculous. They're questions people want to know about you. And this is because you are an Australian icon, whether people like to admit it or not. And that's why
I don't think that's right.
Well, an icon doesn't necessarily, you don't have to be loved by everyone to be
an icon. I just think he's a very rounded man. I like the way that he hasn't forgotten his roots, playing out in the eastern suburbs Well, I did it in the Reporter District. Well, what was the league you were in?
Well, cricket, we were in the senior turf of the eastern suburbs.
Yeah, well, I was in the Reporter District. They played out at Box Hill.
That was football.
That was cricket for me, eastern suburbs, and then we played in the amateurs.
Yeah.
And we went from E grade to B grade under my captaincy.
Well, I came straight from school to into the first side at Geelong, so I didn't play in any sub-district nonsense. I just came straight in. Now, Jack.
Did you ever play cricket?
Nah, well, a little bit, but I played tennis.
What were you as a cricketer? You haven't told us. Bat and bowler, batsman, or just fielding a silly mid-on where you needed no brains?
I opened the batting for Old Carey for years.
Now, I've got two more questions I want. Could you please, just for the sake of this, could you say into the microphone, pig's ass for us?
No.
Go say no. Pig's ass.
No.
Oh, and why not?
I've never said it. I'm not going to start saying it here to give you publicity.
Pig's ass. Couldn't you say it?
No.
Oh, and what is your favourite?
I can say pig's anatomy.
Oh, don't. Pig's blurter or something. Now, Jack, I know this, when you have a couple of drinks, you like to sing. Don't
yes.
you?
He should have been on the stage.
What's your favourite song? Sinatra is one of your favourite songs, a Sinatra song, or what is your favourite song?
Here's one I love.
And I'm going to sing it with you. What is it?
Fly me to the moon let me sit among the stars. You are all I care for on Jupiter and Mars.
In other words, please be true.
In other words, say you love me. I don't love you, that's for sure.
Well, is that your favourite song?
One of them. I know a lot of songs.
We went and saw Frank Sinatra, not together, but we were in the same audience, in 1959, I reckon,
that's
at Festival Hall, when he was out here with Red Norvo. And he's Red Norvo, who was a xylophone player.
Yeah,
he followed Ava Gardner out.
He had a very good drummer as well.
He did.
I've forgotten who that
was. I tell you, Mr. Barradine. Barradine, his name was.
Was it?
Yes.
I lived in Barradine in Toorak.
It's a
high rise in Toorak.
Is that the joint you sold under your missus?
No, that was Towers Road.
Yeah. Don's asked Amanda out since she was in here doing the podcast. Would you give him permission to take your ex-wife out?
I don't give her permission to do anything. She does what she likes.
Yeah.
But she's never married again. She and I get on very well. Now.
So what's happening with regard to the presidency of the VRC? I see in the paper that she's, back?
She won the election, didn't she? Yes, I've read that too.
And
so you're not conversing?
I don't talk to her very often, but yeah. We have a daughter who's now 30. God, Justin Madden always told me, he used to tell everybody at Carlton, he'd never get dropped from the team, because I used to take this little girl who's about four into the rooms at half time, and I'd plonk her standing in front of Justin, who was always lying on the rub-down table. He didn't do any exercise, didn't even jog before he went back out on the ground. And he used to sit there with his head here, she'd be standing there, and he'd chat to her the whole of half-time.
Fantastic.
And so he used to say to all the other players, and he wrote it in his book, I knew I'd never get dropped from the Carlton Football Club because I'd won over the young daughter of the president.
Well, Jack.
Yes.
This has been enlightening, and I'm disappointed you haven't been impressed with some of my work today, but Don has saved the day for us. And we
I didn't say I wasn't impressed with your work, but he's just a bit better.
Oh, turn it up. Anyhow, we really do appreciate you coming in, and you're a very good man.
I've enjoyed it. And,
I have enjoyed it too.
Thank you for having me.
And we go out with Daddy Cool singing Eagle Rock. Is this Eagle Rock? No. You're moping around.
Come on again or something.
I'm moping around the streets late at night.
I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Diligent research.
Come back again.
Don just.
I'm just crazy about you, babe.
All he did was look up about how you went at Carey.
I spoke to you.
No one's ever heard of Carey.
What?